Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. So, revitalize and replant. We're glad you're here to join us for another episode with Mark Clifton and our special guest, Mark Halleck. I'm Dan Hurst, and today we're talking about some of those things that you have to do that are different from every other church, because your church is different. So let's get into it right away. First of all, Mark, why don't you talk a little bit about Mark Halleck and the opportunity.
Yeah, we're glad to be here in Denver with Mark Halleck at his church, Calvary Church. As I said before, it's kind of the mother church of replanting.
Man, quite a statement.
You've been here 15 years, replanted it, and helped replant dozens of other churches across North America. Raise Up Replanters here through internships does a great job with that. We've been doing a series, by the way, on sort of the characteristics of revitalizing pastors. These are things we see God use in men who are revitalizing churches. And I wish we'd had the I wish Kyle, who's our producer, would have had everything running. We just did about 20 minutes, you and I, sitting here on the old couch together, talking about all kinds of things, revitalization.
Yes.
Some of the best conversations take place between the podcasts.
That's
actually
true. That is true. That's true.
For sure. And so, by the way, the couch is really nice.
We're here on the couch. It's a dirty old couch, but it's classic.
We're in Mark Halleck's church basement, and it's kind of the youth room, and it has this old white couch.
Yeah,
look like it came.
You would
out
be afraid if you were in here at night.
Would I?
Yeah,
I'm a little fearful of the daytime.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure you are.
Anyway,
we don't know what's going to happen.
It's just an old building and an old couch.
And that's why we love it.
We're glad to be here.
That's
but
right.
Hey, we're going to talk today about three more characteristics. If you missed the previous podcast, go back and listen to it. We talked about being a visionary shepherd. We talked about gospel orientation.
Yep.
We talked about missional emphasis.
That's right.
And so now we're going to talk about two or three more. And what's the first one, Mr. Hurst?
Let's get into this idea of organizational awareness. And I love the way that that's worded, because organizational, immediately we start thinking, lines and figures and, this person is in charge of this and so forth and so on. But along with that comes the word awareness. And let's talk about this. How do you become organizationally aware of your church?
Well, I think some guys have no clue who really makes the decisions in their church. They may know what the Constitution says and the bylaws say. Hopefully they do. But just because your church has a constitution and bylaws doesn't mean that's how the shots are really
called. That's exactly right.
Especially in a normative-sized church, a smaller church, where everybody seems to have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your church governance allows the most carnal church member to disrupt anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to know, when we say organizational awareness, we're really talking about organizational intelligence.
Intelligence.
Are you intelligent about how your church functions?
Yes.
Do you know enough of the history not to step in it?
Yes.
In other words, you may come in there and say, we need to clean up the church roles because there's a lot of people on here on these roles who aren't coming anymore, and I don't want to pastor a church where you have three times the number of members and only that half that many ever attend on Sunday, and so we're going to clean up the roles. Well, that may be a good thing to do, Mark.
Yeah.
But you may not realize that the pastor just before you tried to do that and got fired.
That's exactly right.
Right. You didn't learn from that. You don't know how to approach that.
Yeah.
You have no emotional intelligence at the point of organizational work.
That's right. I mean, here's the bottom line. The bylaws, what we're trying to talk about, these are the rules to the game, if you will. When we talk about guys, and they're the rules to the game.
You know, you're better at this podcast.
No, listen.
Yeah, you
just
really
play
are.
But they're rules to the game. And so, listen, when you go into a church, you've got vision, you got these ideas that at some point, Lord willing, you'll get there after you've won the hearts of the people, after you've loved them well, you've shepherded them well, you've built trust. But until that time, the rules you play by are the rules they have.
Now, this brother may be listening to this podcast, so I want to be careful because his heart's in the right place.
Yeah.
All right? But I got a text the other day from a young man who was having some issues, and so I said, well, send me an email and we'll talk about it. And he did, and he said, look, I've got some real problems here. I've changed the name of the church. I changed the front of the sanctuary. We've started removing people from the roles. All these things, he said, we've needed to do for a long time. But he said, I've received such pushback, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to survive as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, brother, I'm sorry. How long have you been there? Drum roll, please.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
9 months.
Oh, man.
9 months. Yeah. I've been there nine months.
Yep, yep.
I mean, my goodness. I got to a church in 9 months. I haven't even unpacked my boxes yet. I mean, unless God really shares something with you that's way out of the ordinary, you shouldn't make any changes in the first year.
Yeah.
Dude, you just got to live with those people, marinate with those people, hear their stories, understand that where the landmines are, understand how damaged they might have been, know who's really making decisions, know who you have to talk to and pray with to get to understand the church. Man, don't come in there and start making changes day one, for goodness sake.
No.
Everything needs to be changed. We'll talk about that a little later in Tactical Patience.
But it takes time.
But it takes time.
It takes love.
And you've got to have enough organizational awareness to know you may be the pastor in name, but you're not the leader yet.
Yeah, that's good. Really good. You know, people will ask about here Calvary Inglewood and how quickly we made changes. We did not change anything in the bylaws for 3 years.
For 3 years.
Okay, that's 3 years. Well, what'd you do in 3 years? Here's what I did. Tried to love the heck out of people.
Yeah.
Preach the word.
Yeah.
Pray like crazy.
Yeah.
And try to help my people fall in love with the community.
There
that's it. Literally, that's it.
Right.
And to lead them with passion and zeal. Because here's the deal. And then play by the rules of the game. Even though I wasn't crazy about the rules
of the
game. Even though I thought I had better rules. And by God's grace, in 3 years, some of the rules changed. And there were some ridiculous rules.
Right.
But listen, if you don't win the hearts of the people and win them to a bigger vision, even apart from those rules, man, lead with the word. That's why you lead with the word. Then, man, you're going to be shooting yourself in the foot.
And you need to know what could happen in a business meeting. What's been the past? Yeah. Who might say something? You need to know who you might need to talk to ahead of the business meeting to get some. You know, when I was at Warnell, we had some people that were, you know, they would become upset about things, and they just had a. It was a history of sort of, and Warnell was a church in Kansas City that we replanted. And, you know, there was just a history there of sort of fussing and fighting at times. And so I had some older people that could be cantankerous and feel like they just had the right to say whatever they wanted. And I realized I had some other older people who were very sweet and gracious. And I would lean into the other sweet and gracious older people. Mm-hmm. And I would say, look, would you help me?
That's good.
That we could work with these other folks, your friends, your peers. You've known them for years. Maybe we could start changing the way we talk to one another, changing the way we express. And they really did.
Yeah.
And it took some time. But it was much better than me just going to the people that were a problem and saying, look, stop this behavior.
Yeah, that's never going to work.
It's never going to work.
It's never going to change anyone's
heart. Which brings us to the second topic, and that's pastoral grit. You know, when you know, sometimes grit is the good thing. Sometimes it can be the very wrong thing.
Well, and I when I first came up with this particular list, I think I called it an ability to endure pain.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
It's really what it is. But one of my guys that worked with me, Jimbo, he said, you know, you could endure pain and not make any changes.
Yeah, that's
and there
true.
Are a lot of guys who've been in pain for 20 years and their churches are still dying. So just enduring pain isn't enough. Pastoral grit is enduring pain and making changes. And I think that's really the key. And so pastoral grit is, yes, I know it's going to hurt.
Yeah,
I know it's going to be difficult, but I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to turn my back and I'm not going to give up.
That's right.
And if you're going to be a revitalizing pastor, one of the best pictures I can give you is usually it's like you're rescuing a drowning swimmer. He's going to beat you up all the way to the shore. But when you get to the shore, he's going to thank you for bringing him there.
Yeah,
and unless you're willing to endure all those punches all the way to the shore, you're not going to make it
as a
revitalizing pastor.
Dude, that's so good. And here's why our joy in Christ, our joy in the gospel must be our strength. I mean, the way you are gritty as a pastor, the way you endure pain and keep swimming to the shore is knowing, one, that your Savior's got you, that your joy is in Him, not in being beat up as I'm swimming and trying to save this person's life. It's an attitude that says, and this is the Apostle Paul, man, you know, how could you consider it pure joy? Well, in James, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. There is a depth there of joy and trust in the Lord that basically says, bring it, world.
Yeah.
Bring it. Bring it, Satan. Bring it, because Jesus is better and He's bigger and He's going to sustain me and He's sanctifying me. He's making me more like Christ. And that is the passion of my life. But the passion of my life is not to just revitalize a church. The passion of my life is to become like Christ. And this is a means by which God is doing that.
And I think sometimes we go into ministry believing that somehow or another we deserve to be treated a certain way as a pastor. Mm-hmm. We're entitled to a certain level of respect, a certain, and we have to really approach it realizing this is spiritual warfare, and it's going to be painful and difficult no matter what we
do. No matter what.
And our generation isn't the only generation to ever encounter adversity in ministry, for goodness sake.
That's right.
I mean, previous generations were burned at the stake. I mean, they lost
everything. It's got them pretty dang easy. That's the truth.
They lost everything. And some of you guys listening to me, man, I love you very much, but if some lady in your church, elderly lady, gives you the stink eye on Sunday, or somebody sends you a text all in caps, you're ready to send out your resume. They don't love me. They don't care for me. They don't. Kind of get over yourself at that point,
that's
guys.
Right. That's right.
Find your love and acceptance in Jesus Christ and what he's done, and realize this is tough work. And if you don't have the pastoral grit to do it, you're not going to be a revitalizing pastor. Yeah. I don't mean you're a jerk.
Yep.
I don't mean you're an angry person. I don't mean you like to do battle, but you've got a pastoral grit that says this is going to hurt, but the pain's going to be worth it.
That's right.
Now, there's a whole other issue with your family and how to work with them through that as well. But guys who have been used by God to revitalize churches possess a pastoral grit where they can endure pain and still make progress toward the future.
See, and this is practical theology at its best. I mean, this is, what do you actually believe about God?
Yeah.
What do you actually believe about the sovereignty of God and the providence of God in suffering and pain? This is where, before you become a pastor, man, you got to spend some time getting your theology right.
Right. And I often tell guys, you know, that person that's in your church that causes you all kind of problems that you wish would leave, if they left, somebody would replace them.
That's right.
Okay. There's always somebody at the table to give you
that's
problems.
Right.
Did you ever think that was for your edification?
That's right.
That the reason that person is there is to take away the things that shouldn't be in your life, to make you rely more on Christ and less on your own wonderful ability as a leader.
Amen.
So I really think that pastoral grit goes a long way.
Well, and wherever, and here's the truth, wherever you go, there you are. So if you're the guy that, whenever it gets tough, goes to another church.
I know.
And then a few years goes, listen, the problem isn't the people. The
right.
problem, listen, I'm not saying they're not a problem, but the issue is, who are you in Christ, man? Like, how do you see suffering? How do you approach suffering and pain? And I'm not saying it's, you want to just be beat up your whole life and that's fun. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is, what is God doing in the midst of your pain to grow you in him?
Yeah,
and to lead your people to see what it looks like to have joy even in the midst of trials.
And you have to be able to endure that pain.
That's right.
There is pain in ministry.
There is pain. It hurts.
It does. And there's a long haul in ministry. You know, you're not here for a mission trip. This isn't a 2-week thing and you get on the bus and go back home.
That's right.
I mean, you're here. That's why that's the story I shared a while ago about the guy who was there for 9 months and made all those changes. You're not there for 9 months. No. If God allows you there for 9 years, 10 years,
that's right.
You have no idea what God can do with you in year 8 and 9 if you didn't mess it up so bad in month 8 and 9.
And Sunday's coming, because next Sunday that person who drove you nuts last week is there, and guess what? You got to hug them again.
That's right.
You don't avoid them. You hug them again,
oh,
and
absolutely.
You love them. And they may look at you like they, and you know what? You know, was it Abraham Lincoln? I don't know. Somebody said, you know, kill him with kindness. That's a nice way of saying it. I'll tell you what, the best way.
I don't know who said it. I always say,
well,
Charles Spurgeon.
Well, Spurgeon. Yeah, maybe Spurgeon. He was,
you know, I had a friend of mine, and he had one of these new church marquees. We talked about church marquees a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Don't put silly things on your church marquees, please.
Please.
Please. Don't put there, our Sundays are sweet.
Yeah.
Don't
just
do that.
Just the worst.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
Put a scripture up there, or put something. But my friend, he had this huge new marquee, and so he put up there this. He loves Charles Spurgeon, right? So he put, a lie is walking around the world while a truth is putting on its boots. Charles Spurgeon. And I was driving by, and I had to pull in the parking lot, and he was in his office. I go, Tony, what in the world?
There's no way.
He said, I love that line. I said, that's Mark Twain. I said, Google it. Oh, it is? And he said, yeah, I like Spurgeon better. So it stayed up there.
Poor Spurgeon.
Poor Spurgeon.
Getting some bad quotes.
Everybody, so just always just the default is, well, I think Charles Spurgeon said, and you'll be all right.
All right, I want to switch gears real quickly, because we're going to get into a very, very sensitive, painful subject for almost every pastor that is in revitalizing and replanting, and that is spousal perseverance.
Yeah,
you know, how do you deal with that? And because a replanter's wife has to possess a love for Jesus and for her husband and for the church also.
Yeah. Well, and I want to compare this to church planting. I've spent majority of my life in church planting.
Yeah. Yeah.
God's allowed me to be part of planting a dozen churches in Canada and the United States and work with church planters all across North America. And so I have a love for church planting. And we had characteristics of church planters, and one of the characteristics of a church planter is spousal cooperation, right? So spousal cooperation means just what it says. They got to be in this with you as a church planter. This isn't something you do without your spouse.
Yeah, right.
But in replanting, we didn't think spousal cooperation was enough. So we saw it as spousal perseverance.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in replanting, I believe it is in many instances, I think in most instances, it's harder on the spouse than church planting.
Yeah.
Now, church planting's hard. Financially, it's a strain. Uncertain future, it's a strain. You know, bringing all the children's equipment to a school, unpacking it, all of that's a strain. Maybe they're meeting in your house. You know, that's all a strain if you're... But when you are in a replant situation, first of all, for that wife, they're going to... Whoever the greatest pastor's wife was in the history of that church, that's who they're going to compare you to.
That's right.
Did she play the piano? Did she work in the nursery? Did she leave the WMU? Were her children always well-dressed? Were they always well-behaved? Did she come early? Did she stay late? I mean, the lens through which they look at you as a spouse is so unfair many times. And they're going to judge the way you dress, the way you talk, the way your children behave, all those kinds of things. Yeah. That's hard. And then when things get really difficult, when things begin to change and some of the people really begin to push against change and they realize that they can't really affect you as a pastor, you've got pastoral grit and you're okay, they're going to turn it to her.
Mm.
And they're going to come to her. And that's happened to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I had people at the churches that I served as we replanted that would actually turn to Jill and say, why is Mark doing this? Or could you tell Mark that we... It was not a good day when I came home from church and Jill had messages that she did not want to carry to me and maybe she was told to do that.
Yeah.
And so perseverance means your wife, your spouse, and your children need to know this is a long process. Mm-hmm. And you can go back. We did a previous podcast where we talked about our families and how to minister to them.
Right.
But your spouse is going to look at this at times and say, look, they don't care for you here. You got people who are opposed to your preaching, opposed to your leadership. We're not making any money. I mean, this is usually not a church revitalization is not a place where you have a lot of financial security. You could do better somewhere else. It could even be that maybe her parents are asking, why is your husband still at that church? It's in decline. Why doesn't he put his name in someplace else where the church could grow? There's all kinds. Satan knows that.
That's right. That's
and right. So if your spouse is not ready to persevere through this, you're probably not going
to
make it.
Yeah. And so let's get, so just some practical things that come to my mind. First of all, I think one of the things you're hearing is the importance before you take on and head into a replant context, you've got to help your spouse and together honestly count the cost.
Yeah.
You've got to count the cost. I think part of this, there's so much to be excited about, and I'm an excitable guy. There's so many things to get excited about, but there is a real cost. And I think we aren't doing anyone a service at all, young couples, if we're not being brutally honest about the challenges that are going to come. And so we've got to honestly evaluate and count the cost. On the other side of it, when you take a position, you're in the church, these are things where, as a pastor, several things I would say. One is, does your wife really know and feel that she's the number one ministry in your life, that you love her, that you care for her more than anything?
That is so powerful. And by the way, too, she's not called to be an elder.
That's right.
So don't lay on her eldership.
That's
in other
words,
don't come to her with every problem of the church and give it to her because she's not called to deal with it.
No.
Now, we could have a whole other podcast on how you do need to keep your wife informed of what you're going through. Yeah. You don't want to hide things from her. She needs to share that with you. But you do not go home and unload everything that happened in elders' meeting.
No way,
everything
man.
That happened in the deacon's
meeting.
You got
to find some friends. And if you need friends, we'll help. We'll be your friend.
Yeah.
We'll help you find a friend.
Yeah, call Mark Halleck.
Call him. I'll be your friend.
That's
I'll be your friend. I'll give you a hug. I'll give you some encouragement.
Don't give that to your wife because there's nothing she can really... And she's not anointed and called to bear that burden.
That's right. That's right. You love her. You pray for her. You encourage her. You listen to her. You spoil her. You love her. That's what she. That's what you do with your wife.
I'm going
to
say something really maybe controversial here.
Oh,
and I gotta be careful because I don't want to be controversial. I spend my whole life trying not to be controversial.
How does it feel to be such a failure?
It is totally a failure at that. totally a failure at it. And I don't want to be controversial. Okay. But I think there are times you need to give your wife permission, if she needs to stay home from church some Sunday, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
If she's just at the end of her rope, if it has been, she's not feeling well, whatever. The idea that sometimes you need to say, honey, if this just, you just have the freedom to stay home. Yeah. And you just tell folks, she's just not feeling well today. And, my experience has been, if they know that freedom is there, they're much more likely to say, no, I'm okay.
That's true.
I can go. And I think you need to be sensitive to that.
I think that's really good,
and there are times that, man, it's just too much for them, and they need some, and so that's really important.
The last thing I just want to say is you can't be her only friend. So
that's
you
right.
need to help her find friends, whether they're, and if they're not there in your church, if they're not there in the community, get her connected. One of the things we try to do with the Calvary family, and we could figure out other ways to do this, is help her find an online cohort with other pastors' wives where they can encourage each other and talk together and pray together. So you need to help her find the support she needs. I think those things are absolutely vital.
When I was in Canada, when Jill and I were in Canada, in Montreal, in a French culture, I was very fulfilled in what I was doing. It was very exciting to me, but my wife and my kids were having a difficult time transitioning in the culture, and I was not sensitive to that. I was just having fun, right?
Yep.
And they were having a real, real difficult time. And I remember one day we were out for a walk, and I thought everything was going fine, and my wife had a conversation with me in which she informed me things were not going fine, in a conversation I will never forget. Mm-hmm. And, man, it got my attention. And God in His providence, I went the next Sunday, I think, or soon after that, to a little tiny Greek Baptist church, had about 8 or 10 elderly ladies and a couple of young men in there that did translation for them. I think they were their grandsons. They hadn't had a pastor in years. And so it was a Sunday afternoon. And so I went and preached for them. And they, these sweet Greek elderly ladies, could look at Jill and see she was lonesome and hurting. And they came around her that Sunday.
Wow.
And they hugged her. And they loved on her, and they adopted her.
Wow.
And from that Sunday on, Jill was part of that Greek culture in Montreal, that Christian Greek culture. And they cared for her and loved her, and everything about our time in Montreal changed.
That's
because
incredible.
Those ladies loved my wife.
Wow.
And they weren't even in the church I was planting.
Yeah.
So I just think you're right. Finding a place where people can love on your spouse and take care of her is really important.
That's so good.
But
man,
she's got to persevere through this with you.
Yeah. Wow.
Great words as we've looked at characteristics of a revitalizing pastor. And we're going to continue in an upcoming episode on more characteristics of a revitalizing pastor. And I hope you'll plan on joining us. Of course, we ask you to click on the little button and subscribe to our podcast. That's important because it helps us know who's listening and how we can minister to you in a better way. And certainly feel free to leave us comments and write to us. And if you have questions and comments, we'd love to read those. Well, most of them anyway.
Yeah.
And so
we read them? We do read them.
We do. Well,
we stay up late at night.
Kyle
read them.
It's Kyle's job. So we'll see you at the next episode. Thank you so much. See ya.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.